Coming up, a Naz and a Note, a Minx and a Mac. It's time to watch before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Before You Buy, our product review show on TWiT, where we get some of the latest and greatest products and we give them to our staff and we let them bang on them to get a real world sense of just how they fit into life. These are real world reviews, and we've got some interesting ones for you, starting with Father Robert Ballacer, Society of Jesuits, and our host of Enterprise Tech. He's an enterprise guru this week in Enterprise Tech. He also hosts Know How, soon to host a show unnamed. We call it Padre's Unnamed Fall Project.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out a name for it. Something that fits.
It could be this week in coding.
Could be.
You like to code monkeys, but I don't know.
All the clever titles don't really say what it does.
Yeah. We'll figure out something. Anyway, it's a show about programming and programmers, and it's going to be really cool. And it's going to start very soon.
Yes, we're looking at, 2 months away?
We've front-burnered it. Mm-hmm. Soon. But meanwhile, we thought we'd give him something, since you're an enterprise guy.
Right. So I wanted something that maybe crossed that boundary between enterprise and consumer.
First, what is a NAS?
A NAS is a network-attached storage device.
That's explanatory.
Yeah, exactly. it's basically a bunch of hard drives in a box that lets you access it from anywhere.
I think of it as a computer minus a keyboard, mouse, and monitor.
That's pretty apt.
That you can access that computer from anywhere on the network. The computer's visible to all the other computers in the network. And what do you use a NAS for?
Well, anytime you want storage that's not attached to the device, so for your notebook, for your laptop, for your tablet, for whatever it might be,
right,
you want a NAS because anywhere your network goes, your NAS goes with you.
It's also, so you might use it for backup, you might use it for media serving. Now I'm getting it because it's storage that's attached via the network. Network-attached. So we gave you the IO Safe.
The N2.
Let's take a look.
The N2 is a 2-bay network-attached storage box from IO Safe that is billed as disaster-proof. In reality, the N2 is two products in one, a high-performance Synology NAS inside a 28-pound disaster-resistant suit of armor. In the past 6 years, I have personally seen IO Safe products survive everything from the relatively mundane impacts and high G-force events, cooking in 1400-plus degree flame, dunkings and fire hoses to simulate floods and firefighting efforts, to the more extreme. I've watched IOSafe enclosures crushed under the treads of a backhoe, blasted with multiple shotgun rounds, and scorched by lightning. In each case, the data was recovered off the drives. The N2 uses all of IOSafe's know-how to give users the convenience of network-attached storage in the IT equivalent of an Abrams tank. The armor starts with a steel shell that is capped by a steel and ceramic door, held in place by 2 hex bolts. The door fits snugly into the inner sheath, which is actually water-impregnated ceramic. IOSafe created this material, and it's been used in all of their rugged desktop products. In a fire, the ceramic ablates, keeping the heat from reaching the core while the water evaporates, both cooling the ceramic and creating a positive pressure that pushes smoke and soot out of the case and away from electronics. Inside the door is another steel cap, which is actually the start of the NAS capsule. Removing the cap reveals 2 drive bays with secured SATA drive sleds that will currently accommodate up to 4 TB SATA units, like our Western Digital Red series of NAS design drives. The bottom of the front face houses an array of LED indicators, as well as the power and backup buttons, a USB port, and an SD card reader. The back of the N2 sports 2 USB 3.0 ports and a single gigabit Ethernet port. The setup wizard will have your new drives up and running in about 10 minutes, and then you can play with the exhaustive list of N2 features. Windows, Mac, NFS file sharing protocols, of course. FTP, FTPS, SFTP, TFTP, Pixie, why not? WebDAV, you betcha. VPN services, media indexing, network backup, VLAN support, all part of the package. The N2 makes it easy to create shares, add users, join existing domains, and pretty much everything you might want out of a Soho NAS, no matter if you're using Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, or Android. The N2 can also host your website and MySQL databases, make itself available to the outside world via DDNS, auto-configure your router, set firewall and quality of service rules, enable SNMP monitoring integration, give you a terminal shell, and set all of your standard networking parameters. Performance tests showed impressive transfer rates of about 53 megabytes per second write and 83 megabytes per second read, which put it into the upper echelon of SOHO NAS performance. As impressive as is the N2's disaster-resistant design and performance specs, the real value of the N2 is in its included data recovery service. The standard N2 comes with a $2,500 one-year insurance policy for all your data. If for any reason you lose your data, be it equipment failure, disaster, or user error, IOSafe will pay to get your data back, no questions asked. DRS can be extended for up to 5 years for 99 cents per month per terabyte, and upgrading to DRS Pro ups your insurance to $5,000 per terabyte. In all, between the Armor, the Synology NAS, and DRS, the IOSafe N2 is one of those rare products that delivers exactly what it promises: disaster-proof storage with the speed and convenience of a NAS. The IOSafe N2 network-attached storage server is available now. You can find it for $600 and up.
That now, okay.
The price.
Yeah. It makes, but no, I love it. And I want, it makes, I want to kiss my NAS because.
Well, cover your NAS.
It is a great thing. And I have a Synology, which I love. Now, first of all, let me cover a couple points. People thought they saw this already. You did review the portable.
Right. So they had their portable drive, and we brought that up before you bought it.
Right. And we shot, that's the one you shot and all that stuff.
Correct. Right. And there's a lot of the same technologies, but this is the first one they've built that's designed to be attached to the network.
Right. So not it's not for everybody. You're paying extra for all of those features. It's right. For somewhere where you wanted to store stuff and like backups, and you really wanted them to be safe against disaster. Right.
Well, I mean, you've got that rule of 3-2-1. That's how you're supposed to handle your media.
3 copies, 2 different media, 1 off-site.
Exactly. The thing is, this almost acts like an off-site because you can have it on your site. You can have it go through a disaster. It will still be there. It'll survive for 30 minutes at 1,600 degrees. It will survive being submerged. It will survive being underwater. It will survive being crushed. And because it's running in RAID 0, so it's mirrored, you actually have 2 copies of all the data. That's 2 chances to recover.
Right. So standard drives inside, but it's just the enclosure that is special. It's, you know, got all that fancy stuff. I would still say have an offsite backup.
Yeah.
But this makes it even more robust. Your disaster planning is even more robust because even if there's a fire, this thing's likely to survive it. So that's why you pay. What is it, $600?
It's $600 empty. So that's no drives. That's bears.
A premium of $150, something like that? It's not terrible.
I mean, think about it. You love your Synology because it's fast.
I do.
Right? And you can access it with any device.
You know what? I choose an NAS by software.
Yeah,
and I just love the software. It's easy to use, easy to configure. There's add-ons. It does all the stuff I want it to do. So this is their hardware with Synology software on it.
Correct. They just put Armor around the Synology NAS. So everything that you know about a Synology NAS is the same. This thing is crazy fast. It's really reliable. Right. And the reason why we don't have it here is because it's actually running in one of my data centers. I've got 2 of these, one in San Francisco and one in Denver. And they're synchronized. Anytime I push a bit of data up to one, it goes over to the
other.
That's
the way it should be.
That's
now
how
it's really
be.
Redundant.
Right, right.
Although, as we learn about CryptoLocker, there are some concern because that's what we call a hot backup, which means that if the network attached storage is seen as a drive letter on the hard drive and you get CryptoLocker on your Windows machine, it will not only, this is a form of ransomware that encrypts your data, it will not only encrypt your local data, it'll encrypt what's on the NAS because it's drive E or whatever.
Right.
And then if you're doing that synchronization, does it do versioning?
It can, but most
make
people
sure you
don't
turn that
choose
on.
To do it because, you know, they don't want to waste space.
Right, but then you're gonna have 3 copies of the inaccessible encrypted data
which
nicely backed up, but it's not going to help you restore it. So something to be paying attention to these days. This CryptoLocker is a nasty bug. If you want to know more about it, we talked about it on Twit. On Tech Guy and Security Now, Steve Gibson spent some time on. This sounds like a definite buy. I really like this.
I think so, yes.
If you need that kind of
if you need
robust
it and
protection.
If you've got that kind of data that you absolutely have to protect. Because what you're really buying is that insurance policy. Remember, it could be any reason. You could have done something stupid and deleted your data. They will still get it back for you. One time, no questions asked.
So you send them the melted husk
and
of your drive
they'll get
the stuff off.
All right. So it's rugged. It's fast.
That's what you're
paying
for. It's quiet.
It's feature-packed. It's got DRS. That's what you're paying for.
I mean, if you had to pay drive savers to do that, it'd be thousands of dollars.
It'd be thousands and thousands.
Thank you, Father Robert Ballister, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech and Know-How. And we'll look for that extended review of the IOSafe on a Know-How coming soon to a Twit near you. Jason Howell is here.
Hello.
Of TNT fame and all about Android. You scared me off last year.
I'm sorry.
The Galaxy Note. It's a 10-inch tablet. I was very intrigued. It has a stylus.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Note phone. This is the Galaxy
tablet. Yeah.
And you said you didn't like the screen that much. So we got the new edition, the 2014 edition, the Galaxy Note 10.1.
Yep.
Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Is it much different from last year's?
I would definitely say so. So, yes, first of all, if you go to my YouTube review.
You were scathing.
A lot of people did not like my review because I gave it a don't buy.
But that was chiefly the screen.
That was the big problem that I had. Yeah. If you're paying $5 to $550 for a 10-inch tablet, it's premium tablet. It's premium territory as far as Android tablets are concerned. The resolution was 1280 by 800.
Yeah,
that's and the reason for that, they said, was because of the Wacom technology. It just wasn't working with the higher resolution displays. Well, they've cracked that nut. This is actually twice the resolution, 2560 by 1600 resolution.
Now and you're talking.
I got to say, the display on this is gorgeous. It's vibrant. They really solved that main complaint that I had.
Yay.
And it's just a solid, sharp-looking display.
I see they've adapted some of the Note 3 styling. You've got the pleather, stitched pleather back.
Yeah. So okay, so I actually like the
you know what?
The it's design easier to of this. Grip. More or less, yeah. It's totally fake leather. Yeah. I mean, it's not even pleather because it's not cushiony. It's right. It's kind of like plastic that's been made to look like leather for the most part. You know, even right down to the stitching on the side, which is kind of cheesy.
See, on the Note, it's real stitching.
Oh, okay. No, right. In this, it's not. It's a total plastic overlay.
Right.
But it has a nice grip to it. And, you know, from afar, if you're, you know, in the business world and you want a tablet that looks a little bit more professional, I guess, if that's important to you, people are going to look at it and they're probably going to be tricked enough, you know, from afar, if that's important to you. But overall, the design, I actually kind of like the design. I think the way that they, you know, kind of have the glassy white with the chrome around the side kind of gives it a nice, more premium kind of look and feel. They changed it this time around to put the S Pen up at the top, which I actually liked a lot more than down in the bottom. I felt down in the bottom, you kind of had to go out of your way to get it. Here, you're already holding it in landscape anyways. It's just right there. You just pull it. And quite frankly, having that S Pen with kind of some of the advanced functionality that has down here, it has this little air command window, which I believe is part of the Note 3 as well.
Yeah, the Note 2. This is part of, or I'm sorry, not the Note 2, the Note 3. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And, you know, really cool, like right off the top, when you remove the pen, it opens up that window and then you can get right to making your notes and everything. You can also pull that up on the S Pen. There's a little button on the side here. If I hover, you can see a little, I don't know if you can see that in the video, but you can see really a little indicator that says where I'm hovering over. Uh-huh. I press that button and it'll pop up the air command. So it's just some cool features like, you know, hey, I want to, you know, capture this desktop. So I draw that and that becomes kind of something saved in my scrapbook for later. I can write over the top of it. Little nifty features like that.
Samsung's really promoted this notion that they do Android Plus. In fact, at their developer conference, they really wanted to talk about their SDKs, their overlay. TouchWiz. They didn't even mention Android, even though it's on an Android platform. This is a Samsung device.
Absolutely. And it's pretty loaded as far as the specs are concerned. 1.9 gigahertz octa-core Exynos processor. This is the Wi-Fi version, 32 gig Wi-Fi version for $549.99.
A caution on Exynos that I've learned from my Galaxy S4. Because it's a Samsung processor, it hasn't made it into the open source community. So these will not be readily rootable or modifiable.
They're a little bit more difficult.
Hard to remove TouchWiz on an Exynos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you got to be okay with TouchWiz. I mean, when you're in the Samsung world, as far as this is concerned, if it's not a Google Play edition, which this definitely isn't, you got to be okay with TouchWiz.
That's why you buy a product like this, because of the stylus, because of the additional features, right?
Yes, it's kind of a catch-22, right? Yeah. Like, you might not like overlay, but then again, they're not going to add in this functionality that isn't inherently built into the core of Android.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're going to build around it. In the past, I haven't really cared much for TouchWiz. It didn't bother me as much this time around. And, you know, they've definitely made a lot of refinements here and a lot of advanced, you know, kind of S Pen, as you say, S Pen functionality to kind of go into it. You've also got your multi-window support. So you have a menu over here on the side. So I could pull up Evernote on one side and then I could pull up, you know, YouTube on the other.
They promote this heavily in their advertising. I never used it. Do you find it useful?
It's neat. I didn't find it directly useful. It seems like the kind of thing that might get useful over time. You know, in the last week that I've been playing around with the tablet, didn't use it so much other than to test it out.
They show people sending text messages and dragging images from a gallery into the text message.
Yeah. You really got to buy into Samsung's kind of thought process when you get a device like this. But you know, as far as the specs are concerned, pretty, you know, octa-core processor, so that sounds great. 3 gigs of RAM. I will say that TouchWiz, one of my main complaints is just that it kind of has a certain lag that is hard to showcase right off. You almost have to like get in there and touch it and move it and operate it for a while. And you start to kind of just feel like TouchWiz slows things down.
I can see that lag.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, that was like two seconds
visible.
Of a switch.
Yeah.
So little things like that that kind of are a little bit of a downside. But for the most part, you know, they address my complaints. The display is excellent. The camera is still a camera. It's a camera on a tablet. I have a hard time rating those because I never use a tablet for the camera. So
people do,
but you know, as long as it's serviceable, which it definitely is serviceable.
How many megapixels?
8 megapixel on the rear and then 2 megapixel on the front. So pretty standard as far as that's concerned these days. Battery life was pretty okay. It's an 8220 milliamp hour lithium ion battery. They claim up to 9 hours and you know, I certainly didn't find myself in a situation where I was hurting battery life.
If you use the Note 3, this just looks like a big boy version of the Note 3.
That's exactly what it is. I mean, it's all about the S Pen.
That's
right?
Smart though, because it's people presumably have used that, and so now they want something bigger. This is a logical place to go.
Yep, absolutely. Gaming was great on it. Overall, I was really happy with this.
So the lag is not a lack of processor speed.
Yeah.
Gaming is fine.
Yeah.
It's just something
I
else
thought
going
I found gaming yeah. and
it's
I was
all
playing
the pixels. I don't know.
Yeah, I was playing Riptide GP2, which has a lot of moving parts. It's a really great way to test kind of graphics performance on Android. Dead Trigger 2, and I thought they played really smoothly, and this was a lot of fun to game on. So it's just it comes down to that TouchWiz overlay, which I just feel like it slows things
down.
You
love it or you hate it.
Yeah, exactly. So as far as the pros, the display is magnificent. S Pen support is, I mean, you're not going to find this kind of integrated stylus, air quotes, support in many other tablets on Android right now. So the S Pen is part of that. And it has, I think, a pretty nice premium kind of stylistic approach this time around. Cons, performance lags and stutters in some places, typically TouchWiz. The camera, but, you know, what are you going to do? It's a tablet. And then it is pricey, $550 for the Wi-Fi model.
32
gigs of storage, yes, on this. So I recommend it as a buy if, again, and I think I mentioned this last year, like if you want S Pen / advanced stylus support, it's kind of the game in town. It's probably the best as far as that category is concerned. If all you want is a nice premium tablet, I think you could probably look elsewhere because you don't need to spend that extra $50 to $150 for the S Pen if you're not going to use it that much. But I think for Wacom fans, they're going to love it.
The good news is they've addressed the issues you had with last year's screen.
Yeah, absolutely they have.
And so it's high resolution. It looks great, which last year's did not.
Yeah.
There you go, the Galaxy Note 10.1. And did you say buy? Did you say try?
I say buy.
You say buy.
Yeah, particularly for Wacom fans or people interested in the S Pen. Yes, buy.
Jason Howell tonight, all about Android.
That's right.
There were some big Google Plus announcements today, so we'll be watching. That'll be interesting. And then
it's an interesting time of year for Android.
No Nexus 5.
Man.
Still waiting.
I want to believe. Come on.
I believe.
Give me my next phone, Google.
I'm dressing as a Nexus 5 for Halloween.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
I'll be invisible.
Yes. I don't exist.
It's vapor. It's a bunch of vapor.
I vapor, yes.
Our great technical director, Brian Burnett, has a little brother. Did you know that? Little Grog Burnett. He's sweet.
Grog.
He's adorable. And he's also reviewing the D-Boom speaker and the Minx Go speakers and the Muse Mini speakers and the Edifier Predator speakers. It's a speaker roundup with Little Grog.
Hey, guys. It's Greg with twit.tv. And before you buy, and if you want speakers, I got speakers. Got big speakers, little speakers, medium speakers, you name it. Black speakers, white speakers. More speakers than you can shake a stick at. So the first speaker up is the Muse Mini. Now, you get what you expect with the Muse Mini. It's a tiny little speaker, boasts that it's portable, and you can take it anywhere with you, to parties, picnics, what have you. Doesn't really have room-filling audio. You know, when you have a speaker this small, you kind of get what you pay for it. And it comes with a USB charger. The pros and cons on the Muse Mini, it's small, has good battery life, it provides more than adequate enough audio, and the size is awesome. So, for buy, try, or don't buy for the Muse Mini, I'm going to give it a buy because it does exactly what it advertises to do. Next up, we have the Edifier Predator E1100 2.1 sound system. So this is intended for your computer, but obviously could be used for just about anything else you wanted to plug it into. One thing I really like about Edifier products is that they always like to, you know, sort of make the designs a little bit strange, not what you would expect. Edifier, no, they like to make theirs, you know, curvy and futuristic looking. I find it funny that this product's called Predator when the subwoofer looks more like the head of an alien. So real quick, the pros and cons on this system. 2.1 sound, and it looks really cool. But the cons, no remote, the speakers leave something to be desired, and the MSRP price being at $79.99. Frankly, you can get better speakers for cheaper, and that's why I'm going to have to give this a don't buy. Finally, save the best for last. We have the D-Boom by Muse Mini versus the Minx Go by Cambridge Audio. So first off, these speakers are actually in different price brackets. The Minx Go is closer to a $200 speaker, while the D-Boom is more in the $100 price range. But since they're both advertised as portable speakers with superior audio, I figured I'd do them together at the same time. Now, audio quality? The D-Boom puts up a good fight. I'm not going to diss it there. But Minx Go is just superior in audio quality as well. So first, I'll do the pros and cons on the D-Boom. The D-Boom has good battery life and its portable size, NFC capable, plus Bluetooth capable, and with the price point at $100, it's the cheaper of the two speakers. As for the cons, I just wish that it filled the room a little bit more when I had it turned up all the way. And also, I absolutely despise the finish on the front of it. It leaves so many smudge marks. It drives me absolutely nuts. As for the pros and cons for the Minx Go, it's Bluetooth capable, has outstanding battery life, outstanding audio quality, and it's pretty good looking too. And for the cons for the Minx Go, really the biggest con is how much more expensive it is than speakers of the same size. But really, you get what you pay for in the end. And that's why, out of the two, I prefer the Minx Go, but I'm going to give them both buys. I'm Greg with twit.tv, and before you buy, and this has been the Muse Mini D-Box, the Edifier Predator, and the Minx Go by Cambridge Audio.
He's so cute! Now, so he's really, it looked like he was really tall.
It did.
But he's standing on a box. He's only about 4 foot two.
He must be.
He's very short.
He's tiny.
Tiny little yeah. Greg.
He's Burnett. Taller than I am.
I'm
what
kidding. My favorite line in there, it's called The Predator, but I don't know why. It looks like Alien.
It's true.
You
got
to be
does.
A geek
it
to
does.
Get that yeah. joke.
It totally yeah. does.
All right. Moving right along, Shannon Morse has joined us. She's the producer of Before You Buy and, of course, producer of Know How. And what else do you do?
And soon to be hosting a show with Mr. Padre.
You're going to be in that programming show with
yes,
Padre. That's
yes,
great.
I will.
You're the guinea pig.
I'm the guinea pig.
Awesome.
I'll be the student.
Awesome. And now, have you always worn one of these wristbands or
not
pedometers?
Not always. Okay. I started with the Fitbit One, I believe it was, the original
that
one.
Was that was the belt.
Just, yeah, you just clip it onto your belt or whatever.
I see a flex on your wrist right
so
now. That's the thin one.
I have
one.
A flex on. I also have the new Fitbit Force.
This just came out. I'm very excited to find out more about it.
So I've been wearing this for about 2 weeks. A lot of people haven't gotten theirs yet. Sorry, Liz. I stole her flex. So first off, I wanted to give you kind of a size comparison because the big drawback of the flex was that it didn't have a screen. You would have to bang on it.
And it just lights up.
To get it to light up. And
like
tell
a
you,
Jawa.
Tell you what percentage of sleep or what percentage of steps that you've taken. This one, on the other hand, and there's a little button on the side.
Does it tell you the time? Oh, it is. So
time?
That's you can use it as a watch, kind of, which is what I liked about the Nike Fuel Band. I love
that it finally shows you things, so you don't have to log on to your phone, which is syncing to it, and figure everything out from their Fitbit.
That's a little
app.
Awkward, though, to have to reach around like that.
Yes, yeah, so I'm just doing.
Is
this
that because you're you're wearing it on your right wrist. If you wore it on your left wrist, would it be less awkward or no?
Well, I'm just doing that because, you know, the camera.
Oh, that would be the normal way you'd do it? Okay, that's not so bad.
So it shows you the time. It also shows you how many steps you've taken for the day. And then this little line at the bottom gives you a percentage that you've done for the day.
So you're shooting for 10,000.
How many miles?
That's
how many calories you've burned. How many stairs you've taken, how many flights of stairs.
That's something the Flex did not do.
How many active minutes. So I've been really lazy today.
Yeah, that's good. So they've added altitude.
Yeah, you can do, also you can set the sleep, and the sleep is very easy. You just press, hold down the button for 2 seconds.
I could never remember on my Fitbit Flex what blinking rapidly did meant. So
and
this will actually
vibrates,
let me know I
am sleeping.
And it
tells you how long you've been asleep for. Yeah. And then you press it down twice again for 2 seconds, vibrates again, and then it turns off.
That's how much you had, 7 seconds of sleep.
Yeah, so it's a lot easier to use. It's a little bit bulkier. The size is definitely different between the two. That's kind of a drawback for me because I have these teeny tiny wrists that I'm wearing it on. So it, for me, it gets caught on some clothes, but not a big problem for a lot of guys out there. But all in all, I really liked it. I'm still getting the same kind of exercise out of it. It's still making me get out there and be active, even though some days I just want to be lazy. Although, unfortunately, it still doesn't track calories very well. It does tell you how many calories you've burned, but it doesn't give you any kind of automatic intake. So if I eat cereal every morning, there's no automatic way in Fitbit to check it off and say, I'm going to eat cereal every day, so I don't have to plug that in every single day manually. So that's kind of a drawback. So my pros and cons for this, the pros, obviously, the display is a big deal for me. Battery life is excellent as well. It still lasts about 7 days, and there's no additional tracker. So, for example, with the Force, there's no tracker that you have to take out. With the Flex, to charge it, you have to pop this little doohickey out and charge that now, with the integrated USB.
I got to say, that's a pro on the Flex because at least you can replace the band. Bands are cheap. You can get a variety of colors.
That's
and
true.
When the band disintegrates, which they all do because they're rubber, you're not out of luck on that. I don't know what you're going to do.
That's
you're
true. It is. It is rubber, so that is a problem. Also, one of my cons, it is bulky. The clasp is a little bit tougher to tighten, although I assume it'll get easier over time. You can replace the clasp, though. And it does still have a USB charge cable. I would like it if
so you
it
have
was
to plug
just,
that. That's how you charge that. You plug the whole.
Yeah, I would like it if there was just like a pop-out USB and I could just plug this watch into my computer. Right. Instead, you still have to plug this into
a special
it.
Special connector.
And you also have this wireless syncing dongle for the first time that you set it up. And both of these are $19.95 each if you lose one. So I lost mine from my Fitbit One, so I can't use that anymore.
Right.
Unfortunately. Right. So I had to upgrade to the Force, which I honestly don't mind.
So try, buy,
buy? I give it a buy.
Yay!
Yeah.
Still a buy for the Force. I got to tell you, Shannon, and with all due respect, it's still ugly.
It's still
all
ugly,
of these guys are kind of ugly. You know,
they came out with a pink one for Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Pink don't make it, don't make it not ugly.
It would match my
just
shirt.
Makes it pink.
Whatever.
And that's where I think Apple is going to have a real opportunity. Even the Galaxy Gear is a little.
I'm sure Apple
and ugly.
Would come out with something that would be gorgeous.
Well, that's the challenge. But if they can, all of this stuff is going to look like last year's technology.
That's true. That's true.
But for now, a great way to stay active. You said $130?
This one's $130, yes. $129.95.
Force. And
I
Shannon Morse says the Force is a buy.
It's a buy.
So Apple had its announcements last week. They announced new iPads. Can't get it. New iPad Air. Announced new iPad minis with retinas. Not only can't get it, don't know when you can get it. They announced... what else did they announce? Oh, they announced new MacBook Pros with Retina displays. Those you could get. So, of course, what did I do? I went out right away and I ordered the new MacBook Air with Retina display. I'd forgive you, Father, for not knowing whether this is this year's or last year's.
It looks
it's
a little identical.
Identical. Now, we do have Thunderbolt 2 ports, which is nice. That makes... This is, you know, makes it commensurate with the Mac Pro, and I think everything's going to move to Thunderbolt 2, which is the faster version of a Thunderbolt. There are two of them. You'll see that's the MagSafe connector, the same one they used on the Air and last year's MacBook Pro with Retina. There's a USB 3 connector on that side, another USB 3 connector on the other side, HDMI port, and SD card slot. This is all pretty much the same. It's Thunderbolt 2 is the big difference. And the big difference really is what's inside, and that's the Haswell processor, the fourth generation Intel Core processor. Haswell has a few benefits, 50% battery life according to Intel, better performance, better Iris built-in motherboard graphics, and this is an Iris Pro because it's the higher-end model. This also has its own standalone GeForce graphics as well. So you have NVIDIA graphics as well as the motherboard graphics. Now, you pay the price. So these start at $19.99 for the 15-inch. This is the base $25.99 version. That is with an i7 processor. There's a lot to be said, you know, about the specs on this. This is a spec-driven machine. 2880 by 1800 means it's Retina. That's 220 pixels per inch on this 15.4-inch screen. It does come with Mavericks installed. It's a 2 gigahertz i7, which turbos up all the way to 3.2 gigahertz as needed. Mine comes with 16 gigs of 1600 megahertz DDR3 RAM. You can't upgrade that, so make sure you get the RAM that you want. It's soldered right in there. Now, they offer a variety of sizes of solid-state drives, and they're getting bigger now on these solid-state drives, up to 512 gigabytes, which is, you know, I think pretty good news. The model I'm looking at has a 2.3 gigahertz i7, 8 gigabytes of RAM, an NVIDIA GeForce GT650M graphics card, and I think I got the stock stock amount of storage space, which is 512 gigabytes of storage space. That set me back a whopping, what did I say, $25.99? I'm trying to forget it. I didn't really need it because I have last year's model. But a number of the things that we complained about with previous models of this is, you know, the old one was a little bit slow on, in particular, moving from full screen app to full screen app. You don't see any lag at all now. That's definitely an improvement thanks to the Haswell processor. Battery life has been pretty good, although not remarkably better. And that's partly because we have such a high resolution display. I just unplugged it after full charging. It says you're going to get about 4 hours. And indeed, I'm down 15% just during this show alone. So that's, it's not exactly, you know, life-changing battery life. If you want that, get the Haswell version of the MacBook Air. That's really remarkable. We're talking 12, 13, even better. And one good thing, Mavericks does improve the battery life quite a bit because OS 10, 10.9, the newest version of OS 10, which this comes from, does a lot to kind of combine wake-up states into one single block so the machine's not waking up a lot when it's doing things like getting your email and that power nap. So there's a lot of things that I like about Mavericks to improve the battery life. So there are a couple of cons. First of all, $25.99, $2,000, it's a lot of money. It's very expensive compared to comparable Windows laptops. So this is basically the same hardware in here. Also, some users are still complaining of problems with the hardware, at least in the early releases of this. I haven't seen any problems. Some users say, just like last year, there are two kinds of panels, Samsung and LG. Those, and you don't know what you're getting. This one is an LG panel. They say the LG panels are experiencing that ghosting on the gray that previous versions of the MacBook Pro with Retina display had. I do have the ghosting. I went out and did a test, and I said, yeah, sure enough. But I, you know, if I stare at it, I see it. But I haven't noticed. It hasn't bothered me in real life. Some users say this: the ghosts will stay there for 20 minutes. That could be a problem. Others have reported keypad and a trackpad issues. If you're worried about those kinds of things, wait a little bit. These will all be worked out by Apple, either with firmware upgrades, software upgrades, or maybe even hardware upgrades. You can bet that at that price, they're going to get this fixed. And anecdotal reports say that if you do go to the Apple store with a problem of ghosting or some sort of trackpad problem, they'll be pretty good about replacing this right away. Beautiful display. So pros and cons. Of course, the display comes number one. It is just fabulous. The faster processor, better battery life, all big pros. Cons, I mentioned price. I mentioned the technical issues. And you saw there how tightly packed it is. There are no user serviceable parts inside. It's all glued together. You can't even upgrade the RAM. What you buy is what you get on the MacBook Pro with Retina display. I'm not going to give this a buy only because if you have the older version, as I do, there really is no reason to upgrade unless you're really bugged by the minor amount of lag on the older version. On the other hand, if you want the best laptop out there, there's no question in my mind that the power, the display, just the gorgeous, elegant design, this is a work of art, but you pay a price. So I'm going to give it a try. Not a don't buy, but you should try it. You should take a look. And if you can afford it, you don't have last year's MacBook Pro with Retina, and you really want a fast, beautiful machine that you'd be very happy to use day in, day out, then it's probably worth buying a try. That's the best I can do. I'm sorry. It's the best I can do on the MacBook Pro with Retina display. I'm happy I got it, but I did not notice as much of a difference as I thought I might. In fact, if you put these side by side, my old one last year's and this one, I bet you I couldn't figure out which was which.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. The big difference is the Haswell chipset and
right.
the Haswell CPU, which, yes, will get you better power management, but that's a tiny little fraction of the power that the notebook uses.
The display is really right. got to
so
be killing
if you have last year's version,
right.
yeah, you're not really going to get. Now, if this is going to be the first MacBook you're ever going to get, yeah, I mean,
it's great. And if you want to, yeah. if you put Windows on this, man, it is beautiful. It's a really nice machine. No touch. Should mention that, and I don't think we were talking about this before the show. I doubt Apple will ever do touch. They and most Apple users are very happy with the capability that they've given to this fabulous trackpad. And I didn't even mention this. It almost goes without saying. Best trackpad in the industry. The glass trackpad is easy, smooth, flawless performance. The keyboard is easy to type on. Really has a good look. Of course, backlit keys. You know, in that respect, you know what you're getting with an Apple. The unibody design is very elegant, very solid, no flex. It just built, you know, like a MacBook with Retina display. Thank you, everybody. We had a good time. I hope you did, too. Thank you to Shannon Morse, producer of Before You Buy. Thank you to Padre Robert Ballister, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Little Grog Burnett. He's grown up so fast, isn't he?
Oh.
He's just such a sweetheart. Who else? Jason Howell
Jason.
From All About Android. He'll be up in just a bit if you're watching live with All About Android this evening. And I think that's
it.
Everybody. I got them all. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to thank you. We couldn't do this show without you. We're really glad you're here. You can watch us do it live every Tuesday afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Remember, we're changing the clocks. It's a fall back time. So we're going to set our clocks back an hour. That means we'll be UTC minus 8. So when we begin the show at 4 p.m. Pacific time, UTC minus 8, I'll add 12. That's 2400 UTC. If you want to watch live kind of middle of the night. But if you don't worry. On-demand audio and video always available in a couple of ways. We've got it on our website, twit.tv/BYB. But we also make YouTube versions available, not only of the whole show, but of each individual review. And in fact, sometimes unedited. You didn't edit, Greg. Sure you did. All
totally
the funny
not.
Parts
no,
were taken out.
No, that's,
no,
totally
that's how he was, yeah. huh? YouTube.com/... Before You Buy, you can email us, byb@twit.tv. Let us know what you'd like to see on Before You Buy. Anything exciting in the works?
Maybe.
Yeah. She doesn't want to tell, does she? Well, you'll just have to tune in. Remember, you got to watch Before You Buy. See you later. Bye-bye.